called Gilbert Trehin, Limbs Aflame, and it's my selected title in Irish. It was published by Core, who are better known as the magazine, and they forgot to open the boxes, in fact, and they forgot to distribute it. So I kind of demanded the books back, as one might. So this particular title, Gilbert Trehin, it's not for sale, and anyone who wants it can have it. Illustrated haiku, even haiku that are illustrated with calligraphy alone, are called haiga. So the cover of haiga here reads, Bonon kyo's grown through, the gone down to the last. Foghorn at twilight, little by little, the world disappears. I was saying, everyone, that I live in really eerie, which is in earshot of Doon Laoghaire, and in foggy weather, you can hear the foghorns. So most of the haiku in this book was written in my own garden. So this one, you can see the haiga there, these illustrations, I can't draw them. But these illustrations were done by a Romanian haiga master called Ion Codrescu. And this reads, Quirig schlepen gio cogunt na crinid. I wrote that in Wales, Northern Wales. Quirig schlepen gio cogunt na crinid. Mountain sheep in the mist, chewing the universe. This one you can find in the Haiku Museum in Tokyo, if you ever call in there and mention by name. The Japanese seem to like this one because they like odd perceptions. They really do. I was with a Japanese photographer, well, he's kind of an academic, he's a professor, but photography was his hobby, and he spent one day photographing 800 different maple leaves in Kyoto. And then, if that wasn't bad enough, or beautiful enough, that night, we had to watch them all over again on the computer. 800 shots of just maple leaves. He saw minute differences that I didn't see from slide to slide. But he taught me a lesson that, in fact, there are no two things really the same. There are no identical twins anywhere in the world. Everything is minutely different. Every two thoughts are different. And to somehow slip into that space between two thoughts can be a haiku moment. And I write about that in the book. Haiku Enlightenment, and a companion volume, Haiku, the Gentle Art of Disappearing. Disappearing, because one can disappear in that space between two thoughts. And it's a good place to be for a while. There is nothing beautiful, good, ugly or evil in the world of pure haiku. There are no dualities. There is only the one perception. You cannot say this is beautiful, this is good. It's neither beautiful nor good nor evil nor bad nor anything. It's what it is. So this one was written by the banks of the Ganges. Kurt Siganges Prehorn Makirte. Kurt Siganges Prehorn Makirte. A corpse in the Ganges, a crow takes a rise. The haikuist must stand back from making any judgment whatsoever. Just witness the passing phenomenon, whatever it is. The haiku haiku is essentially about the present, but present is always pregnant with the past and the future as well. So, glass, negushina, secondly, bibberibishnacht. Green, the pines, seconds before snow. Very acceptable in haiku to pay tribute to your haiku masters. My living haiku master is a man called Jim Hackett, living in Hawaii now. Lucky Jim. And my past master would be the Japanese master Hisa. It's a three columns that hold up the haiku world in Japan: Hisa, Busan, and Basho. Hisa is my own favorite. He's always from the fleas, baby sparrows. He loves baby sparrows in particular because he himself he was a bit like a spike bean. These migrant workers, they were called, you know, sparrows in Japan. They kind of blackened the roads during those harvest times, and were sparrows. So anyway, Fruggy, tell me the word, a cochinish trauma on a fog. Fruggy, tell me the word, a cochinish trauma on a fog. Little frog, who was your mother? Where is she now? Autumn. Haiku are essentially seasonal as well. From spring to summer to autumn to winter to the new year, these are the five seasons of Japanese haiku. We move through these seasons conscious of change externally and of change in us and in our perceptions. So that, I think we're talking about Heinrich Heine earlier. Heine said, the German Jewish poet, some of the best poems about summer are written around a great roaring winter fire. You can't do that in haiku. You can't be imagining some summer. It's not summer. Or some spring. It's not some spring. You are in that season. You're in that day. You're in that hour. You're in that moment. You're in that second. Space between two thoughts. We had a little pool at the back of the little pond, really, at the back of the garden. And my wife Esna loves frogs. And tadpoles. And I have hundreds of haiku about frogs and tadpoles. A murmur enough, there's the turbine. There's a grinning. A murmur enough, there's the turbine. There's a grinning. Alone tonight. Tadpoles of the universe. I was saying earlier when I have relations in Chile, in Valparaiso, and I went out there and okay. Marganamir Valparaiso, Clogged Garamon of this medical. Marganamir Valparaiso, Clogged Garamon. Medigate. Flea market in Valparaiso, a German's helmet, rusting away. You see strange things in Valparaiso. You sometimes see even a German helmet from the war days next to a Jewish candelabra, you know? Very opposite images. Snug black olin long of rib, the Ivar fame, snug black. For long as it got evil fame, a magpie drinks a big thing in its own image. Okay, so that's the free book for later on. I was 60 recently, and had about 160 books in my name, but this is actually my debut in English, and I won't really explain why it's an English plot. I have to say something about what the book is. It's called Uttering Her Name, and it was originally a sequence of 200 ecstatic poems that were written under the influence of a particular philosophy in India called Bhakti. Bhakti is intense devotion. It can be to a guru, a god, a goddess. I call this particular style Neo-Bhakti, because it's not pure Bhakti in the Indian sense of adoring a goddess or a guru. The poems are addressed to an entity that I call Daroma. Mythologically speaking, or historically speaking, Daroma was the daughter of Oma, or Ogma, or Ogmias, who gave the Celts the gift of writing, or in poem form. But she's just a name to convey a muse goddess. One could argue ultimately that Bhakti poetry realizes that the goddess, the muse, does not really exist, but that she is symbolic of the soul or the self. So that probably the greatest Indian teacher of the 20th century, Sri Ramana Maharshi, spoke of four paths to self-realization. One, self-inquiry. Two, bhakti. Three, selfless devotion to mankind. And four, the pursuit of beauty. I would like to think that maybe one or more of these paths can be combined in poetry as well. In another Indian sage, Sri Aurobindo, said the future of poetry is mantric. Too much introduction, let's go on to the poets. Since the first line of each poem is this utterance, this exclamation, this invocation to Daroma, you have at the end of this book a unique feature called Index of Second Lines. Daroma, what speeded them on their way? What distances did they travel? The sky was full of falling stars. You draw down too much light. Soon the heavens will all be bare. Daroma, yesterday I went looking for you and found you everywhere, particularly light of swallows, innumerable in the darkening air. It seemed they wish to fan the dying sun to flame. We walk the roads together in the west of Ireland, Atlantic thoughts drowning our footfall. An otter looks at us from a river as though we were human. You relish the smell of turf smoke incensing sheep skulls. Clouds borrow patterns from fading Gaelic manuscripts. I pick forgotten fuchsia, fix it in your hair. Music wafts from a pub, distraught tin whistles, a crow alights awkwardly on dishevelled thatch. I press your invisible hand. Daroma, I became a night watchman for you, staying awake for hours on end, eyes peeled. Once I almost nodded off, sensing you I became alert again. Scowling in the mirror, Tibetan mask. If I keep this up, they will surely honor me with a gold watch, melted down, torqued, placed around your neck. Aroma, I was a beggar. He threw me a smile. I ran off, delirious, into the distance. Later, tired, hungry, I sat down. Now, people toss me coins. I throw them back at them. All I ever wanted was your smile. Aroma, I became a gypsy fiddler for you and played all day and through the widow patterned night, long forgotten tunes of exile and longing. I grew a resin white beard, forgot to eat, a sempstress fainted at the sight of me. I dashed off polkas, marches, slow airs, hymns I played as if they were jigs. Wounds flowed down from the hills and gambled with children. I played to the moon and stars, to the wind and the rain I played, and the dead leaped from their graves, danced and embraced. Aroma out of aged cherry wood, I carved a wind harp and placed it far from the eyes and ears of men. A hawk watches over it. No fingers touch its delicate strings. The breeze it is that plays the tune, breeze of morning, breeze of night, warm breeze from the south. Throughout the day it sings, but you, wordlessly, effortlessly, never the same tune. Daruma, I wish to sculpt you, not in granite, you're not that hard. Not in marble, you're not that cold. In limestone, to absorb our tears. So as not to hurt you, I will chisel for just 1 minute each day, wearing a blindfold to protect your modesty. Daruma, I have written a symphony for you. Now you should hear it. You probably never will. I'm having fierce trouble with the orchestra. Triangle player reminds me rather sternly that there are only three sides to a triangle. The lead violinist shrieks, "You have notes here that do not exist." I blush and stammer, "Well, do the best you can." "What do you mean, softly?" complains the cymbalist. "Cymbals clash and that is that." "Oh, I don't know. I fear it may never be heard unless I perform it all on my own." I come knocking at your door and say, "I'm here to check the..." "Watch yourself, if you let me in." "Will it be long?" you ask. "Eternity," I mumble under my breath and begin probing the walls of the stethoscope. My eyes grow large. "What exactly do you think you're doing?" you inquire melodiously in a voice that will never die. I sigh something about trapped voices in walls, prayers in the middle of the night, songs that nobody sings anymore. I can hear something, I say, a macaw possibly. You are already on the phone. "Police aren't all that bad. They allow me to listen to prison walls and grin when I recite aloud lost sonnets." "I bought a 2-year-old and named the filly after you. My instructions to the jockey are clear. If she sweats up at the start in excitement, dismount, rub her neck with sweet grass, talk to her, whisper to her, try not to get mud on those rose white silks. Race her on the outside, away from the cheering crowd. Move gently, rhythmically, be one with her. Under no circumstances shall you show her the whip. She wins by half the track. Reward her with this lump of sugar. Later, in the quaying dark, I'll wash you and groom you in the stable." Paroma was lying in bed. Moths came zooming through an open window and crawled down my skin. I couldn't move. Your light in me brought me. I commissioned a weeping statue of you and donated it to our cathedral. There are reports of miracles. The blind see, the deaf hear, the crippled walk again. Most significantly of all, those in whom the rose of love had withered now weep. Aroma, I designed a gown for you made of fish skin. Its scales glisten when you wander out among the stars. Stars themselves wonder at this reflected light. What new galaxy is this that outshines us? Troubled stars, they have just found out their light is not eternal. This robe, cover your body in ash, comfort them in their vast sorrow. I went to my excellent physician, author of addiction replacement therapy. He put me on heroin and monitored my progress steadily. Is your need for her greater than your craving for the drug? I nodded sagely. He put me on LSD. What do you see? Blazing yellow harvest moons orbiting one another. Their beams are peacock feathers showering on crabapple trees in the eye of the blessed. Their taste is dry. You don't see her at all? Who else am I describing? The doctor is perplexed. The universe perplexed. Aroma, let me find you in a meadow in that tart herb we ate as children, sour sally we called it. Find you in simple days when hens roamed freely scratching the earth. From elderberries I squeeze ink, imagining poems I dedicate to you. I first discovered you in a hen's egg. Round, warm. I thought aloud, the world could be like this, as it is now. Cloud woman, was there ever a time I did not hear you, promising to return? Star woman, invoked a million times. Long grass woman, were you not always present when I played and hid from enemies? Earth woman that opens up when I'm gone.